Morning, folks. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in today. I've got a fun guest in studio. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things, acting, Hollywood, all kinds of weird stuff, samurai swords, who knows what all we're going to talk about. As I'm joined this morning by Scott Boyette. Is that what you're going by right now? Do you want me to use your acting
My
name?
Acting moniker?
Boyette's fine. What would you prefer?
Yeah, I'm not incognito anymore.
Okay. So. All right. Well, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Boyette from Los Angeles, California.
What's up, Fairfield?
I appreciate you coming out here and being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. As he is the other half. I hesitate to say better half. You wouldn't say better half.
I would not. No, I would pay for that.
To Amy Taylor, who was on the show on Monday, and you guys are an entertainment power couple, is what we'll call you.
Some have called us that. Some have called us other things.
I suspect that's true, too. Scott, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
And
good
to be here.
Tell everybody kind of your attachment to Fairfield and just your attachment to this area, and then we'll talk about your early history and maybe some tell you where you're from too.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm originally from Colorado, rural Colorado up in the mountains. A little town called Evergreen. You've been to.
Yeah, beautiful town.
Grew up a little tiny ranch.
You know, you call that rural. It's really not. You're 20 miles from Denver.
Well, that's true, but it is in the mountains.
It is in the mountains.
You know, our nearest neighbor was about 5 miles away growing up. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So we were on a little tiny ranch. They had a little lake out there. And, you know, our neighbors were the elk and the deer. So it's a different kind of rural.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. That's true. So you're I know I've been out there. Did you grow up in the house that I visited?
No, I probably 20, 30 minutes away from there.
Okay.
A little further up into the hills. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And you're here in Fairfield visiting with the Taylor family.
Visiting the Taylor family, yeah. My adopted.
The Reynolds family and the Taylor family.
Reynolds and Taylor, yeah, yeah. Married into it. Great family, a lot of fun. Circus family.
Circus. See, now that's the crazy thing that people don't realize. I didn't get Amy to talk about it. I forgot to get Amy to talk about how the Reynolds family is. When you say circus family, it's just. You aren't kidding. Those people ran a circus.
Yeah, I mean, some people say, oh, yeah, my family was a circus. No, literally, the grandma and grandpa Reynolds ran away and joined the circus when they wanted to travel. I mean, I may get the story wrong because, you know, I'm married into this, but I've heard it a few times. But they were teachers. They decided they wanted to travel, joined the circus. I think it was Carson and Barnes they joined, and they were the band people. Music people, and they traveled with the circus.
Took the whole family with them.
Whole family with them, and then they started their own circus.
Right.
And did that for many years. And I think some of the family still does some performances, or did until recently.
Let's get back out to Colorado before we get you into the acting bug and all that kind of stuff.
Sure,
back
sure.
out in Colorado, that's where you grew up, out in near Denver.
Right.
Evergreen, Colorado. How big is Evergreen?
It's, well...
6, 7, 10,000 people, maybe?
Probably 6, 7, somewhere in there, yeah. It's bigger.
Kind of similar to Fairfield.
It's a little bigger than Fairfield, but it's a little more spread out.
Yeah.
You know,
what would they call? What would you call the industry out there? Or do they have one? Skiing?
I mean, in Evergreen, it's just sort of a local, you know, whatever. It's just people just live there. But the industry in Colorado is mostly tourism. It's mountain surfing.
Yeah.
Whether it's winter or summer, you're either up there climbing, hiking, mountain biking, or you're skiing and snowboarding.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Yeah. It's a paradise for that.
Did you do that a ton of that growing up?
You couldn't not. I mean, all your friends were out there skiing. I mean, I was skiing when I was probably on skis when I was 3 or 4.
Right.
Started from there, and haven't really stopped since.
You mentioned that, where you lived out on the ranch was the home of the elk and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Hunter?
You know, for a short time. The problem was the game wardens, if I was hunting in my backyard.
Yeah, I was going to say, how does hunting work in Colorado? I always wonder if stuff is on preserve or are there elk seasons and that kind
there
of?
There are. It's just like out here. There's seasons. You have to get a license, that whole thing. And there's certain places you can go and hunt, and there's certain places it is a big no-no.
Yeah.
And interestingly, during elk and deer season, they both they come down to our valley because you're not allowed to hunt them down there, and they're pretty clear. when they're getting shot at, where to go.
No kidding. So, the elk realized to go downhill.
Yeah, so we would get elk season, I believe, it was October. They would come down and we'd get what we called an elk bog.
An elk bog.
Just a big bog.
What is
of
an
elk
bog?
It's just a big herd.
Like
of
a
elk.
Herd?
Yeah, just hanging out on the road, and you honk out and they sort of look at you.
How big are elk?
They're
much
bigger.
When you're driving through southern Illinois, mm-hmm. If you see deer, you see deer on the road, usually no more than 250, 220 pounds. That's big deer.
At least twice the size of like a white tail or a mule deer.
So they're looking at a 500-pound animal running around.
You're looking at like a 6-foot shoulder.
Good
grief.
A lot
of times, the bucks especially, they are big animals.
Do you have moose in Colorado?
No,
too?
No moose, no caribou, nothing that big. But
nothing that
they're,
big.
They're sort of in between, like a
elk's
deer.
Elk's pretty
moose.
Big.
Yeah,
that's big enough, isn't it?
Yeah, you hit an elk on the road, you're gonna lose.
Do people do that
all the time?
I didn't know how big an issue it was.
Yeah,
out there. It's been a long time since I've been there.
It's the same thing as out here. You know, you're zipping along and it's dark and it's cold and they try to beat you across the road and.
But you can hit here. You can hit a turkey. Or you can hit a deer as long as the deer doesn't bounce up into the windshield or something like that. And if you're driving straight and just basically plow through it, you're going to have problems with your vehicle. But you're most likely going to get through that.
Yeah,
elk sounds like a little different ordeal.
Yeah, well, my dad was sort of in the insurance business for a while, and he had a lot of claims of people hitting elk, and it wasn't only just the car got totaled, but people were in the hospital.
Really?
Yeah, it was rough.
What's the what are the other wildlife out there that you won't find around?
Gosh,
that people can hunt.
That people can hunt. Oh well, that. there's porcupines and raccoons. It's mostly elk and deer.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's mountain lions, which are more predator than prey. They don't often come at humans.
Yeah.
But when I was in college, there was the one kid who was a cross country runner who got attacked and killed by a mountain lion.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh boy, how'd that happen? I mean, just walking around out in the wilderness.
Forgot to duck? I don't know.
Just walking around out in the wilderness. He wasn't like
He was. He was running. He was running cross country
during a meet.
No, just training.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and up there. I mean, I used to do that too. You have these old, trails.
Sure.
You literally are running on
cross country. I bet you cross country running in Colorado is quite a bit different.
It's up
cross country running in Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hilly, rocky places to do it. So. Yeah. Yeah, he was just up running on some fire road and got attacked.
Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah.
Talking with Scott Boyette, we're talking about Colorado. We'll get to Hollywood and that kind of stuff, as he's a working actor in Hollywood. And when you talk working actor, it takes a lot of work. But we'll get there eventually. You went to Evergreen High School.
Uh-huh, sure did.
And this is near... And this is where you probably already knew the South Park boys before then, went to school with Trey.
I did.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Well, I went to school with Trey and a bunch of the writers on the show. Matt, I think Trey met in college, and I met Matt later.
Oh, I see.
When I was moved to Los Angeles. But went to high school with Trey, did a lot of shows with him, and
I got to tell you, you are probably the only person I know who has a character on television named after them or patterned on them.
Right, in the South Park show? Yeah.
Tell the folks who...
The character's name is Trent Boyette.
Okay.
And he's kind of a combination of me and my brother.
All right.
He was...
It's a jerk.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened.
How's that possible?
We were so cool. I don't know. Yeah, he gets framed by the kids for, I think it was a fire or something in preschool, and he goes and spends 5 years in jail and comes back to get his revenge in one episode. And so,
nice.
Yeah, he's got tattoos and a big leather jacket and that kind
of
thing.
That's wonderful. So. See, now that's fun.
Yeah, they apologized to us afterwards.
Did they?
So
they didn't really ask your permission beforehand.
Oh, no. And they just laughed about it. Said, sorry for ruining your family name, man. Like, okay. It's all right.
Nobody pays much attention.
It's all in fun.
Well, those folks have enjoyed a pretty spectacular success out there.
Pretty good long run, yeah.
Pretty nice long run.
Yeah.
Is it, we'll talk a little bit more about Hollywood.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about why did you leave Evergreen? Did you get the acting bug? What happened to you?
I did. I got the Shakespeare bug. So really? I headed off to New York City and started training at a conservatory there It's the only conservatory that's on a Broadway stage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called Circle in the Square.
Okay.
And so I did 2 years of training there, and then I kind of started working the Shakespeare circuit.
Is that typical of the actor's work, the training for an actor is typical, leaving the center of the country or wherever and heading to New York? Or I guess that's where the best schools are going
to
be.
Yeah, you're either going to go to one of the coasts. You're going to go to L.A. or New York. Some people head to L.A. and they want to get in the movies. I was really crazy about Shakespeare at that time and kind of in classical theater,
Yeah.
I had spent some time in England.
Right.
I went to the Balliol College at Oxford, studied Shakespeare there, and then headed off to New York.
What? It's a 300, almost 400-year-old play. I guess they are over 400 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
What got you into the Shakespeare bug? What do you think bit you? Like a high school teacher or something?
Yeah, I was in an honors English program, and I had a teacher who was just the most – it was a class on the tragedies of basically of world literature.
Really?
So we started with the Greeks – and with Aristotle, Aeschylus, Sophocles, Euripides, all those guys. And
in high school?
In high school.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. This Mr. Knight, man, he was awesome.
Wow.
The guy, he was so passionate. He'd sit there, he'd be writing stuff on the chalkboard, and there'd be chalk flying everywhere.
No kidding.
He just couldn't write fast enough.
Oh, just flowing through him back then.
He just loved it. And so we read in class Hamlet.
No kidding.
And so every day we'd get through as much as we could. I got to play Polonius.
You see, now that was probably pretty good, being able to read that in class or reading that in class, because one reads it by himself. Hell, I've read through Hamlet before, and you don't get half the stuff.
Because
if you're in class, somebody can explain what is actually going on,
Right. Well, he taught us, basically, he's like, listen, guys, you're not going to understand some of these words. Here's a dictionary.
Yeah.
Not only a dictionary, but the Oxford English Dictionary, which sort of gives you the best, sort of annotation of what these things mean.
So the teacher basically got you geared into it.
Oh, yeah. And he was so passionate about it. And I went, oh, this is cool. Just the idea of language and the idea of what language means and how to,
the use of it to get your point.
And how it lands and how this is about human beings.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's not a different language. This is English, guys. It's just English. But,
now that's what scares people. Folks in 2015, America, or for that matter, probably England still, look at Shakespeare being 400 years old. They think, this is Middle English. This makes no sense to me today. But the stories are the same.
Yeah. See, now this is probably, some people get mad at this. But quite frankly, I think Americans do Shakespeare better than the British.
Really?
For the most part.
Why is that?
Because when you see Shakespeare done really well, it's like you're watching a movie and you understand everything. Usually, it's Americans doing that. I mean, there's some great British actors. Benedict Cumberbatch just did Hamlet in London on the stage, and apparently he was spectacular. And but there's times where they're very lilty and they're about the sound of the language. You start to go to sleep.
As opposed to making sure that they're understood.
Yeah. I mean, I personally, and I trained with a bunch of Brits who've lived here for so long that they've started this school of doing Shakespeare that it's very much the Marlon Brando school of Shakespeare.
Really?
Versus the Laurence Olivier school.
Marlon Brando putting more feeling into it.
Yeah, just more emotion and more humanity.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you see that. I mean, you can get an audience just cheering or sobbing or
that's fascinating.
Whatever. Just and we did that. I traveled with National Shakespeare and also Pennsylvania Shakespeare. And when you're performing for high school and college kids who would rather be on their phone than watching anything but watching Shakespeare.
Right.
Oh my goodness. And to get them standing up and cheering or whatever,
amazing.
To get them engaged, that was...
that must be a thrill.
That was, worth the price of admission.
I'm talking with Scott Boyette. He's a actor and we're also a producer. We're going to talk about some more stuff when we return here on The Bruce Dickey Show after these words. We'll be right back. Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in. I have a guest this morning. It is Scott Boyette from Los Angeles, California, joining us today. And we've been talking about, we were talking about his early life. Now we're getting more into the acting. I asked you a little bit ago in the break, what is your favorite role? Give me your two favorite roles. Your favorite role to watch in Shakespeare, and mm-hmm. your favorite role to try to act in Shakespeare. And who does the best job in maybe one or both of those?
Man, I think the big ones are always the fun ones. You know, we were talking about Richard III.
Yeah,
I haven't attempted that one, but I've seen a few of the really big heavy hitters out there do it. Anthony Scher, Ian McKellen, who's just awesome.
He does the most recently. Well. Pacino had the movie out too, more recent than McKellen. McKellen's movie's great. Is that Branagh? Did Kenneth Branagh direct that one?
I don't recall if he directed that. And I know, but I saw him. I saw McKellen do that on stage years ago. He did it a couple times. Nazi Germany kind of motif to it. Yeah,
it's just amazing.
Yeah,
how they moved Richard III into that kind of. That kind of thing.
Well, that's the neat thing about Shakespeare is it is supple that way. It is you can move it into because it's about human beings.
Well, and Titus Andronicus did the same thing.
Sure.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's I mean it's human beings in extreme circumstances.
Right.
And so you know you can do that in any kind of political environment wherever it is. People can get a little too fancy with it sometimes and try to fit their concept into it, and they forget it's about human beings, but. You know, for the most part, it's
you're
really...
not thinking about Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio, are you?
Actually, there was some good stuff in that. There's always good moments. There's always an interesting an interesting take, and that's again, it's one of they're the most produced plays in the world that you know the world's ever seen for a reason, because they are supple, they are malleable in that way.
What's your favorite one to play? Favorite role in a
I can't say the word. It's bad luck. Macbeth.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
See, you're not in a theater right now.
Right,
you can
so
say the word.
I'm safe, right? I'm
that's
spin
right.
around three times.
That's exactly right.
Step outside and spin.
Why is that your favorite?
Just the language is so visceral and so intense and I mean the witches are some of my favorite characters.
Well, we were talking earlier this morning. Len was had a different little take on the rhyme, the double boil and trouble or whatever.
He
had one that ends up cursing.
Yeah, I mean he walks in the basically walks in and they have this whole thing and they say by the pricking of my thumb something wicked this way comes.
Yeah.
And then Macbeth so foul and fair a day I have not seen and he comes in and it just it's just so
it's vivid.
I don't know. It's interesting because a lot of people think a lot of scholars say there's missing things from this play there's missing scenes because there's things they talk about that you don't see on stage and that doesn't happen a lot in Shakespeare.
Right.
I disagree. I think basically Shakespeare had a cinematic mind and he just assumed that you would it would be theater of the mind and they talk about it and you would just think it happened off.
So he was editing basically on
exactly
400 years ago editing a scene. That's fascinating.
Yeah,
you like the tragedies better than the comedies, though.
I don't know. The comedies are a lot of fun too, but the tragedies just there's so much meat in them that it's a lot of fun. I mean, and the histories too. Henry VI, Part 1 and 2.
Yeah,
the parting scene in Henry VI is just it's heartbreaking.
See now, I I enjoy the earlier Henry. I like the Henry V is just to me top notch.
Great speeches. Great. I mean, yeah,
And when you talk about the histories, it's all about the speeches. I mean, that's what he kind of. When he wrote those, did he was basically making all this stuff up, wasn't he? I mean, he didn't have any historical perspective. Really.
Oh no,
he was closer to the Henry, but Henry, the Henrys went 115 years before him.
Well, sure, but and remember the you know the Yorks and the Plantagenets
they were still in power a little bit, but.
Right? But so, I mean, but it was, you know, Henry the Fifth is a very patriotic.
Oh yeah,
you know, for the current king and queen.
Sure.
It's
patriotic for every Englishman has probably taken that to heart.
And the Battle of Agincourt, the anniversary of it was just I think what last month or the month before it was recent the actual battle. So there was a lot on Henry V and a lot of the.
Would have been about 550 years ago.
Something
now,
like that.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Richard III, though, is another one that, you know, apparently Richard wasn't nearly as bad as everyone in the play makes him out to
be. The play makes him out to be a real jerk.
Yeah.
A real twisted. Let's call him a twisted human being. How's that sound?
Well, twisted in many ways. Yeah. Physically twisted, mentally twisted, all that.
That's the surprising thing, also, when you see a really good actor. Giving a performance at the top of his art is when you can see, like McKellen doing Richard III. He does things with his body that you just don't see people able to do.
Yeah, that trick he does, I don't know if anyone's out there seen it, but go see it because it's awesome. On the film where he puts the glove on with one hand and then picks up a napkin and snaps it and turns out the candle.
Yeah.
And watching him do that live. I mean, everyone stood up and cheered because it was impressive.
Oh, yeah, that's the end of the scene, isn't it?
Watching someone do that live, it was talk about the pinnacle of an art. It's like a magic trick.
All right, I gotta ask then, since I have seen the movie and I've seen how Richard. All right, spoiler alert: Richard III dies at the end of the movie.
Yeah, well,
at the end of the play.
Yeah, we've all read the books, or
I've never seen it. I've never seen it done on stage. Mm. I've seen the movie, and Richard III basically in the movie in that version of it, he falls out of a big building or something.
How does
he die in the? How does he die in the play?
He dies.
Let me rephrase the question. How did McKellen kill him?
How did he kill? He died on the field of battle. There was sort of a battlefield thing that was going on.
Yeah, he died on. Well, that's closer to real life than anything else.
Yeah, and they chopped him up pretty good. It was pretty brutal.
Well, you know, it was the 1400s.
Right.
He wasn't terrifically well-liked.
Yeah.
All right, so you worked through Shakespeare, you trained in Shakespeare. What did that move you on to? Did you try to stick with Shakespeare through
I,
most
I
of your
did,
experience?
And then 9/11 happened.
Oh, okay.
I was in New York when that whole thing went down.
Really? Where were you in the city?
I was in my apartment. I had just gotten back from touring, actually, the night before.
And apartment in Manhattan?
No, in Queens.
Oh, okay.
In Astoria. So
you had a better view of Manhattan than people in Manhattan, probably.
Yeah, I did. It was because we went down to Hellgate, which is an area in Astoria where you can see the entire island.
Right.
And so, yeah, we watched a lot of it go down. It was pretty, it was not a fun time.
Yeah.
And interestingly, eerily quiet.
Really?
The only thing you could hear were the Blackhawks and the F-16s.
No kidding.
And you know, usually you hear this kind of underlying buzz in New York. There's traffic. There's people talking. There's subway trains. There's all this stuff. Nothing.
Really?
It was quiet, quiet, quiet.
That's
except
amazing.
Except for these choppers circling the island. And then every so often an F-16 would zip around. And that was for about a week or two.
Wow.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So that changed your perspective, though, on Shakespeare? Or?
Well, no, it just, I was making a living, and all of a sudden I couldn't anymore.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. The entertainment district was probably gone for the entertainment industry.
Well, there was nobody was flying in or out to see any shows, because obviously, you know.
Well, that probably lasted months.
They're still feeling the effects of it now, interestingly. Yeah.
See, we were there. I went there 3 years later. Uh-huh. We were there in 2004, and there were still busloads and truckloads of troops riding around southern Manhattan.
Yeah. Yeah. Manhattan went through Hurricane Sandy and all that stuff, too. So there's a lot of changes that have happened since I've been there. But, So they closed everything. The you couldn't do any movies because you couldn't get a truck across the bridges of the tunnels.
Uh-huh.
The grip trucks, the trucks that carry the lighting equipment and stuff. And then
I forget about the practical issues that occurred.
Yeah, and that was it. That was the thing that, and my agents both closed their doors because they couldn't send anyone out to anything because there was no more shows going on, at least for a while.
Yeah.
And there was no TV, there was no film being done there either.
Right.
So moved out to the West Coast.
Not a whole lot of, well, they probably some Shakespearean training out there, but that's not where that was not the Mecca. So
no.
you had to adjust.
Right. Yeah, I found it. I mean, I found the guys that did the Shakespeare out there. There's a really amazing, gorgeous outdoor amphitheater in Topanga Canyon. Woody Guthrie used to live there.
Oh, really?
And they still have the Hootenanny up there every year and stuff. It's a really awesome place. So I worked there for a while and then got into the bowels of Hollywood.
Looking back, you've been in the bowels of Hollywood now, then we'll call it 10 years, 12, 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Other than finding your lovely and vivacious bride.
Yep.
And then having a child and a family, raising a family.
Yep.
How fun is Hollywood? Can be fun,
can
I presume.
Can be awesome. Can be. You know, listen, L.A. in general and Hollywood in particular gets a bad rap a lot of times. There is some pretty awesome stuff out there in Hollywood. I mean, you talk about the culinary scene. There's great food out there. You know, if you're a burger fan, there's probably some of the best burgers in the world in places in L.A.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There is culture, weirdly enough. I mean, we always bash in Hollywood and L.A. for having no culture. And quite frankly, there's a lot of bad stuff, but there's some great culture there, too. You know, museums and stuff and music and that whole deal. So, I mean, it can be a great time and a lot of fun. You just got to know where to look. That's all.
My nephew lived out there for about a year, just out of college. Mm-hmm. And he came back probably, I don't know, 6-8 months ago. And he loved it. He loved it.
Yeah.
I said, why'd you leave then? I lost my lease.
Yeah, it's not an easy place to live. I mean, the standard of living price wise is kind of less than say New York or somewhere like that or London.
But it still costs a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a different kind of getting around. You know, the traffic is nightmarish. But I mean, it can be midnight, 2 a.m, and you hit a traffic jam.
That's amazing to me, and that's one of the reasons it's not my kind of town.
Yeah,
but it's. Whenever you're driving alone, and I hadn't thought about it, but you're absolutely right. You can be driving at 11:30 at night, and all of a sudden you're in a standstill traffic.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes no sense to me.
Worst traffic jam I ever was in, I was leaving a Halloween party in Buena Vista, which is down a little bit south of L.A.
Okay.
I left around 11 o'clock at night. I got home at 5 in the morning.
Hold on a second. You were in a traffic jam from 11 p.m.
Uh-huh.
Till 6 a.m. going how far?
Probably 20 miles.
At what point don't you get off the freeway?
Well, the problem is there isn't anything. There isn't this. I was on the 5 and there was a chemical spill.
Oh.
And they weren't letting anybody off.
Oh, because.
They were locking everybody on there because they were afraid there was some, you know, there was a cloud. So basically they just froze us all in place and they kept us there.
You know those little motorcycle guys kept going.
Oh, if I had a motorcycle, I would have been home.
Those little motorcycle guys—they're the most frustrating thing on the Los Angeles traffic.
Well, splitting lanes. I mean, if you're going slow, it's safer for those guys to split lanes with you. And you know, most people try and give them a little room.
Well, I tell you what, it gets frustrating. I bet you the road ragers out there, and I'm just talking about like hypothetical guy might accidentally open a car doors.
I've heard of it happening.
That's just, I mean,
yeah,
it's
I don't understand it,
but
yeah.
Just awful. I'm talking with Scott Boyette. We're talking about acting, Los Angeles. We're going to get into television and all kinds of other stuff here on the Bruce Dickey Show. You're listening on AM 1390 and WFIW FM Fairfield. We'll be back in just a sec.
July had a firecracker waiting to blow, breaking like a rifle who was making his way to the cities of Mexico.
Living in an apartment out on Avenue A, at a tall on a corner of town. Had myself a lover who was finer than gold, but I've been broken, I've been busted up since. Love don't play any games with me anymore like she did before. She left me right out there through the door. Hell, I still love you, New York. Found myself a picture that would fit in the folds of my wallet, and it stayed pretty good. Still amazed that I wasn't losing all the loop of the place when I was drunk and I was thinking of you. Every day the children, they were singing the tunes out on the streets, and you could hear from inside. Take the subway on the house and the third. I would wait for you and not try to hide. Love won't play any games with you anymore if you don't want them to. World won't wait, watch you shake. But honey, I don't blame you. Hell, I still love you.
Morning, folks. Welcome back to Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 WFIW FM Fairfield, Illinois. My name is Bruce Dickey. I've got a guest across the way from me. We're just enjoying a chat today with Scott Boyette. He is actor, producer. Did you hear your ad, by the way, the promotion of the show where I was promoting your appearance today?
I did.
So you did hear that. I wondered if you were going to hear that.
Yeah.
Do you agree with what I put on there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bon vivant.
Bon vivant.
And rack on tour. We're talking about all kinds of things. Scott is has a widely varied background, as we've already talked about. Lived in England for a while. Lived in New York for a while. Lives in Los Angeles now. Became an actor. You haven't gotten any huge gigantic roles in acting, and you've kind of backed away from that, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, I decided I've.
How difficult is it to get into that for somebody listening and would consider that? That's a tough world.
Well, it is a very tough world. And, you know, it's interesting. Some people who are very, very pretty people, like Evangeline Lilly, who never acted in her life and all of a sudden got lost on the TV show Lost. And some people work for 20 years and never get anything. I mean, it just depends on who you are and kind of who you know. The old adage is, you know, it's sort of who you know that gets you in the door, and it's what you know and your talent that keeps you there.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah, it's a tough world, and I did a lot, and I feel like I kind of achieved most of what I wanted to achieve, and decided to behind the camera stuff was very interesting to me.
Yeah,
and so I started going that route, started producing, started writing, and still working on that as well. And also I was in the stunt world for a while as well.
Tell me about that. Did you get into the stunt world?
I got started.
Did somebody see you fall down?
Somebody saw me get into a fight.
Oh, is that right?
With swords.
What?
Yeah. I was doing a lot of sword fighting. You know, of course, with Shakespeare, you learn to sword fight, and got really into that. I had a very good mentor in conservatory, who was one of the top fight masters in the world. And
really?
I ended up teaching with him. So one of his teaching assistants.
Nice.
And then from that, I sort of started doing stunts and started teaching people how to sword fight and
you were training others.
I was training others, and I still do that to this day.
Do you?
Yeah, it's moved over to firearms.
You know, and it's different. We'll get to the firearms in a second. It's the sword fighting on movies is different from whenever you see, say, fencing in the Olympics.
Yes,
it's entirely different.
Entirely different.
Yeah, how so?
Well, yeah, I mean, well. Okay, this is high school geometry, really, but, you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line.
Right.
So Olympic fencing, you're trying to shorten that straight line.
That's right.
You're trying to, it's a complicated...
Get close and touch.
Yeah, it's a complicated game of tag.
Yeah.
In regular, real sword fighting, you're trying to kill the person.
Okay.
No, different. So the angles are different.
Or at least look like you're trying to kill.
Or look like, sometimes people get a little overzealous in the plays, too.
Have you ever taken an injury, or inflicted an injury on somebody in a play?
Yeah. Well, I was playing Little John at the Tuxedo Renaissance Fair.
Uh-huh.
And my Robin Hood zigged when he should have zagged.
Oh, really?
And
see, that's the thing. These sword fights are incredibly complex and choreographed, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. And you're using weapons that are not sharp, but they'll still go in if you stick somebody. I mean, they're blunt, and they actually hurt more because they're blunt on the edge.
Yeah.
So, you know, but they get all gets like a saw blade because you're hitting edge
you're
to
hitting
edge
stuff.
With things, and so that you get little nicks and stuff in the steel, and then if you kind of run your blade across someone, you're going to get a little abrasion.
Yeah, I suspect.
Not good.
Now, how badly was did you injure somebody?
He was all right.
Did he bleed?
No, that was a quarterstaff fight. So
okay.
Yeah, I had this big 9-foot oak quarterstaff, and he just moved the wrong way. The tuxedo out there.
Yeah,
in the
I forgot it. Little John uses the staff, doesn't he?
Right, yeah. I used a sword. We had a living chess match, which was kind of interesting, and then we did. We had sort of environmental theater and tuxedo, so our fight was on a bridge.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, they had Shakespeare out there, and then we had the Robin Hood band running around doing sort of fights and little shows all around the different part of the Renaissance Fair.
How much training do I guess for I guess it depends on the movie, but how much training is there involved in sword fighting? Because they're using swords, say in the Star Wars stuff now.
Right.
That's going to be it's not real swords, but I presume the lightsaber has. Whenever they're acting, they've probably got some kind of device there that they're hitting somebody with.
Yeah,
right?
they have what's called a hero sword, which is the one you show on camera, and then they have practice blades.
Yeah.
Usually in film, the blades are a lot lighter. They're made of aluminum. They're not made of steel. The problem with live theater, aluminum blades sound really wimpy.
Oh, yeah.
You bang them together, it sounds like you're hitting two tin cans together. Yeah. It doesn't sound cool. So you have to use steel.
You need the heavy steel.
You need the heavy steel. And, that's a big part of it. So with movies, it depends on, you know, the budget. It depends on the actor. It depends on the writers. It depends on a lot. It's amazing that anything ever gets made in Hollywood. It is an absolute miracle. If you think of all the moving parts that every movie and every TV show has, it's stunning that anything ever gets made and put on the air.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of great, passionate people who are...
Now,
really good at their jobs.
We've talked about it a minute. We've kind of glossed over because you're going into firearms as well. How did you move from swordplay to firearms? Just kind of natural progression?
Natural progression. I started doing a lot of when I moved to Hollywood. Started doing a lot of History Channel shows. I mean, I have a degrees in history and masters in military history, and was really interested in working in History Channel shows. So I started working in some documentary style stuff, and got into that and. Doing the stunt work, you meet people, and I had some friends who were who I work with now, who are kind of the guys that did like the military advisors for Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan and that kind of thing, Captain Dale Dye. And so I started working with them, and then people hire us to come out and sort of teach them how to move. How to it's not just firearms, because there's tons of guys out there who are good at shooting,
right?
And they're good at the tactical stuff and all that. What we teach is not only that, but how to do it for camera.
I see.
And it's
an entirely different thing.
It really is interesting. You got to know what sight lines are. You got to know the vocabulary. You got to know how to talk to the directors. And there's a thing we call it actor self defense, because a lot of times lower budget stuff, you don't have a stunt coordinator.
Probably doesn't have as much of a training budget either.
No training budget. And when I did, there was a show called 50 Years in the DMZ. It was about the Korea on the DMZ during the Vietnam era, about 1968. Ray Marichek's patrol. This sort of incident that happened there. And the military advisor came out there and started yelling at people. And these kids had no training, no anything. They just sort of threw them in costume and gave them a rifle. And the guy started yelling at him for doing stuff wrong. And they said, sir,
I'm an actor.
Yeah, I'm an actor.
I'm from Topanga Canyon.
I've never held one of these before.
Yeah.
So I took him aside and started saying, hey, okay, so here's what we do. Don't point this is the dangerous end. Don't point it at anybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't point it at the cameraman.
Yeah.
Keep it here. And that's really where it sort of started, and then meeting other people. And
talk about tell me about the production. You've got a show that you've been working on for years now.
Right.
And that's kind of how the genesis of these shows take. It takes a little time.
It takes time, and it takes, Yeah, it takes time, effort, and
what's the show?
A lot of passion. The show's called Forgotten Wars.
Uh-huh.
It's basically, like the title says, it's wars of great historical importance that have been lost to time and scholarship.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like the Opium Wars,
right,
in China. There's two of them between Britain and the Chinese. You know, a lot of colonization wars. The Irish War of Independence, which happened right after the First World War.
Yeah, see, nobody remembers. 1921 was when the...
Right, right. And it was sort of the birth of modern terrorism.
Right. Really?
Yeah. That's when
the Irish invented terrorism.
Well, the Irish were...
I mean, it makes sense.
Irish are pretty prolific.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
What other... how's that going along? How's the...
It's doing well.
I know you've been in some contests with it.
Yeah, we got down to the last 25 at the New York Television Festival a couple years ago and had a lot of interest and still have some interest. Still some people. We're just waiting. The trend right now on History Channel is, like we were talking about, Ice Road Truckers,
right,
or Man in the Wild, Man versus Wild, Man, Woman, Wild. Dual survival, that kind of thing. So an educational show about war is not what the buyers are buying at this
yeah.
moment. But it's heading back that way.
You ever thought of that, by the way? I mean, you see all these people wanting to get into show business, and
uh-huh.
they go into reality series. They
right.
they somehow get cast in these Man versus Wild. And I mean, you're too old, and did you ever think of like going out and being dropped naked into Patagonia or whatever they do?
Well, not that, but I'm ashamed to say I did appear on an episode of Blind Date.
Did you really?
I did.
How'd that go?
Awesome.
Really?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually ran into... See, usually on that show, if you recall that show, it was always the guy's kind of
yeah,
the doofus,
yeah,
the girl's kind of
yeah,
cool and smart.
Yeah, yeah.
And... They make the guy out to look kind of crazy and
yeah.
kind of, you know, trying to get in
or
the
cheap or something like
or
that.
Cheap.
Yeah.
And I talked to my brother. I told him I've been going on this show. He's like, okay, whatever you do, just be cool. So all right. So I was just cool. I just sat there. We had dinner. We went, we shot pool. They knew I was a sword guy, so they took
yeah.
us over to a fencing
yeah.
studio, and we did some fencing.
Scared the devil out of the woman.
Well, she was supposedly a martial artist.
Oh, really?
Supposedly, yeah.
yeah. How'd that go?
Not too well. Not too well.
Well, Scott.
Yeah. It ended up that they made her look crazy and made me look cool. And
see, now that's good.
Yeah, and that was good.
Because they can manipulate the cutting room however
right.
they want you to look.
And I ran into the writer who wrote my episode one time at a function, and we were talking about it. He's like, yeah, man, you know, you were just so cool, and she was so nutty. We had to write it that way.
That's fascinating. Well, I wish we had another hour.
Oh, man, this has gone by so fast.
Scott, thank you very much for coming on.
It's been really fun.
That's the Bruce Dickey Show today, folks. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.